Morning, everybody. So, Jamie, I know you're a hockey fan. I was at the game on Thursday night, Jets game, and the guy behind me wins the 50-50. It was the second time this season that he's won the 50-50. Now, I got a question for you. I know you're a Leafs fan. I'm sorry about that. But why is it that at the Leafs games with the Jets, the 50-50 pot is always bigger?
All right, I have a theory. But are you ready to hear my theory?
Uh-huh.
Okay. Now, if you don't know, I am a die-hard Leafs fan, which is so easy to be. So this is why. What happens is, when the Leafs are in town, every Jets fan knows that their odds of winning has plummeted. So they figure, might as well go for the 50-50, because this game is going to the Leafs.
I just thought there were more sinners at a Leafs game, maybe.
No.
Well, this Sunday we're talking about gambling. We're in a series where we're looking at our longings and cravings, and one of the classic images that's part of Canadian culture is the roll up the rim. And I got a question: is roll up the rim gambling? The thing about the Leafs games and the 50-50, you know, there's something in there where you go, what would happen if I won? What would happen if I got the $40,000 or $50,000 that was on the 50-50 draw? I can tell you that when they announced the draw, you saw people pulling out their stubs all over the place looking for their number. And immediately, you could see that there was this sense of anticipation. There was this, what will happen if I get the $42,000? Followed by a collective disappointment. Except for one guy behind us, and those who sort of were cheering for him, of course, right? And gambling is one of those things where many of us have to lose so that one person can win. And it's one of those curious phenomenons in our culture, frankly. Many of us have to lose so one person can win. When I was about grade 3 or 4, we had to do a writing exercise. I remember it well. What would you do if you won $1 million? Now, $1 million when I was 8 years old is a lot more than $1 million is now. What would you do if you won $1 million? Many of us have this fantasy and this dream. We say, well, if I won $1 million, I would. And we say all sorts of charitable and noble things, right? Well, okay, I'll take care of paying off the car loan and the mortgage. And I might help with my brother's car loan, too, and make sure that mom and dad's mortgage is taken care of because you don't want that going into retirement. And you start all of these noble things. But then you quickly get to, and then I would. So once you've taken care of all the noble things in your life, what's your and then I would? You see, most of us live with a fantasy like that. Because there's things that we hope for and dream of in the future. And I'm curious to know, when you're anticipating something, what is it that you're anticipating? What is it that you are craving and longing for? I want to talk this morning about gambling, because gambling is a major part of our culture. And I don't really want to speak about this so much at the personal level, but I want to speak about it as a collective level. Us as a community, us as a society. And yes, it has personal implications, but there are times when, as someone who teaches, I really like to encourage and build up. But to be honest, this is one of those that's really hard to do that on. If I was to change costume into period costume, I might walk out here like a prophet in the Old Testament who's wagging his finger at the people. Because frankly, that's kind of how I feel when I look at the stats and as I read the stories of how gambling impacts and affects us. So let me just take you into some of the stats and stories that I've looked at in the past week. So here we have, it says 86% of us as adults in Manitoba gambled last year. 86% of us. Now, they're only measuring gambling as participated in government-run lotteries. So that's scratch and wins, that's going to the casino, that's bingos, the things that the government in Manitoba specifically licenses. So when your community club does a 50-50 draw at a hockey game, that doesn't count in this money. This is just in the government-organized stuff. 86% of us. And if this is how it breaks down, how people spend their money. If you make $20,000 or less, then 46% of those in that income bracket gamble, and approximately $390 annually. And it goes up. If you're $20,000 to $40,000 income bracket, then 62% gamble at about $415 annually. 40 to 60, 70% gamble at almost $500, $495. Between 60 and 80, 76% gamble at about $465 on average. And if you make more than $80,000, then 75% people in that income bracket gamble, and they gamble on average $620. And you go, oh yeah, but it's all going to a good cause, because I saw on the Folkfest banner that it was sponsored by the Manitoba Lotteries Corporation, or my community club has new rink, and the boards on that rink say sponsored by the Manitoba Lotteries Corporation, or there's all sorts of things that our money does good for, right? Well, it doesn't exactly work that way. A lot of the money goes into the government funds. And this is what it looked like 20 years ago, when we look at how much money in Canada was spent, went into government revenue. That means after the prizes have been given out, after the salaries of casino workers have been paid, 20 years ago, $2.7 billion in government revenue. But 2010, which is the last year that we can get complete data for, it was $13.7 billion of government revenue from the lotteries. Our governments are addicted to gambling revenue. And we almost go, oh, I'm grateful, because otherwise it would come out of my taxes. Gambling is, frankly, a voluntary form of taxation. We give to the government in that way. It's the only kind of tax we sign up for. And we do without grumbling, it would seem. This is how it looks here in Manitoba. 3.3% of our annual budget in this province comes from gambling revenue. And you go, okay, well, what does that do? This is how it works here in Manitoba. $702 million. This is a gain from 2010. It's grown a little bit since then. Of the revenue in our budget comes from gambling. That means after the prizes have been paid and the casino workers have been paid, this much money goes into the government coffers. Of that, $5.8 million goes to charity, to the community club and their new hockey boards, to the arts festival or the music festival or anything else that is considered charitable work. The notion that a lottery is for promoting good causes in terms of charity in our culture, it's actually a great sell on the TV ads, but it's not actually that true. And when you look further, you realize very quickly that it has a devastating impact on a lot of individuals. In fact, 6.1% of people who gamble would be considered problem gamblers or being people who are at moderate or high-risk gamblers. It has a devastating impact on 6.1 people's lives who participate in gambling. So I did a little bit of mental math here at the meeting place, thinking, how would that affect us? We're a community of about 1,800 people. We're just measuring adults in all of these numbers. So let's say that there are, and I didn't check any data or stats here, I'm just going off of my basic recall. Let's say that there's about 1,300 of the 1,800 here are adults. The rest are teenagers and kids. If there's about 86%, let's call that, just for easy math, no, we're actually close, but 1,000 people. And let's say that they're gambling on average, just to pick a number between the 395 and 620, about $500. 1,000 of us gambling about $500 a year makes about $500,000. If we wanted to do something good together, we could build 5 habitat houses for $500,000 in this city. If we wanted to do something remarkable with that, what could we do for the Manitoba Cancer Foundation? If we wanted to do something remarkable with $500,000, we could benefit all sorts of things that are happening in our inner city, or with new immigrants. We could bring a whole bunch of people who are currently waiting in refugee camps to Canada for $500,000, and we would still have spare change because we have to put something away for them so that they have income for the next 3 years guaranteed if they can't find work. What could we do with this? It also makes me think if 6.1 people who gamble are dealing with this at a level of addiction that's devastating and destroying them, that means here in this community, that's about 60 of us That's a little sobering. 60 of us are choosing maybe to feed a video lottery terminal instead of getting the groceries. And then we have to explain with some shame and embarrassment to our spouse what exactly happened with the grocery money. And it gets worse from there, not better. You see, gambling is something that our culture is addicted to, and it sells to us. It sells to us as the head of the Saskatchewan Lotteries Corporation said in an interview recently. He says, we use greed as our biggest marketing tool. And I want us to talk today about the impact of gambling in our society and how we participate and contribute to this. So I want to look at the Bible a little bit, because I have to be honest, there is no 11th commandment that says thou shalt not gamble. If you're looking for a direct line in the Bible about gambling saying don't, it's really hard to find. But there are lots of principles in Scripture that might inform how we use our resources. And in that sense, there is stuff about gambling. You see, gambling feeds on sin just as fire feeds on oxygen. There are things in our lives that hook us, that grab hold of us in all the wrong ways, that feed gambling. Just as oxygen needs fire, gambling needs these things in our lives in order to exist and thrive in our society. And so I just want to look at a few of them so that we can say, okay, if I deal with that thing in my life, then maybe it'll have an impact on gambling in our culture. And if it has an impact on gambling in our culture, maybe we can live differently and betterly. Betterly, is that a word? Differently and better than we were before. So, the first thing that I think of as a sin that the Bible talks a lot about is consumerism and materialism, the going after stuff. And I have to take a look at my cup here, and what are they selling me? Apart from coffee, $5,000 MasterCard prepaid gift cards, 40 Toyotas, 1,000 barbecues, 25,000 $100 Tim cards, and apparently millions of food prizes. They say that there are 1 in 6 chances to win, which actually, if you do the math and you've calculated it all out, and I looked at a guy who does actuarial stats, 86% of people never win at Tim Hortons. So 8 out of 10 of us never ever win, which is why I always get please try again. I'm one of the 86% that never seem to win anything. But there's an appeal to all the things that I want, right? I could really use a new Toyota. My old minivan is starting to fall on hard times. I can hear clunks that I didn't hear last year, and they're getting louder and squeakier, and they don't seem to go away when you fix them. They just get louder again. And I want, and I want, and I want. Well, in Scripture, the antidote to materialism is contentment. And gambling never advertises contentment. You won't see that being the marketing tool that is used by any lottery corporation or casino. But the Bible advertises contentment. And don't you want to live a contented life? A place of deep rest and satisfaction where you go, yes, life is good. And somehow we think that winning $1 million is going to allow us to sit back and go, yes, life is good. It says in 1 Timothy, Paul is mentoring a younger man named Timothy. He says, but godliness with contentment is great gain. Godliness with contentment is great gain. Those who want to get rich fall into temptation and a trap and into many foolish and harmful desires that plunge people into ruin and destruction. And then he goes on with a famous verse. Many people have heard it, even if they've never read the Bible. And it says, for the love of money is a root of all kinds of evil. Some people eager for money have wandered from the faith and pierced themselves with many griefs. It doesn't say that money is evil. It says the fascination, the absolute attentiveness to money as a driver in your life, it causes you a lot of pain in the end. So if you want to deal with the challenge and problem, the sin of materialism and consumerism in your life, you don't pursue more money so that you don't have the lust and longing for more stuff. You pursue contentment. So what are the things that bring you contentment? Let me suggest that if you do an inventory of what makes you content, you might want to try this on the napkin at lunch, just sort of write out the top five things that make you truly content. They include, relationships, your family, your kids, things like that. They include having an impact in this world. I feel like I've made a difference. They include lots of things that don't for a minute have much to do with money. And so if you really nurture contentment in your life, then all of a sudden the lust and longing for more goes away. The second one, like contentment, is greed and covetousness. And here actually we do have 10 commandments on it. And it goes like this. Moses instructed the people of God with 10 big deals that if they followed and paid attention to these things, their life in community and their life with each other as families and their life in relationship with God would be transformed. It would be changed. And he said, you shall not covet your neighbor's house. You shall not covet your neighbor's wife or his male or female servant, his ox or his donkey or anything else that belongs to your neighbor. Remember that line that the Saskatchewan Lottery Corporation director used? He says, we use greed to market gambling. We use other people have better toys, and you could have them too as the hook for gambling. There's other scriptures that we find. Jesus said it this way. He said, watch out, be on your guard against all kinds of greed. Life does not consist in an abundance of possessions. Life doesn't consist in an abundance of possessions. What really brings you life? Let me suggest it has nothing to do with a 649 or a scratch and win. And Paul, who wrote to Timothy as a mentor, he also wrote to a church in the city of Philippi. And he said this. He said, I know what it is to be in need, and I know what it is to have plenty. I get the too much and the not enough. I have learned the secret of being content in any and every situation, whether well-fed or hungry, whether living in plenty or in want. And my God will meet all of your needs according to the riches of his glory in Christ Jesus. You see, one of the secrets of contentment is believing that God will provide you everything that you need. It doesn't say that God will provide you everything you want, but God will provide you everything you need. And if we become contented people, then all of a sudden the advertising from the lottery corporation, it doesn't have the same stick and sting as it did before. There's another sin in our lives, my life, that might incline me, as it might incline you, towards gambling, and that is simply laziness. I want something for nothing. I don't actually want to put in the effort to get the positive result. I would just like to scratch and win and get it. I would like $1 million under my fingernail, not $1 million from having invested a life in proper education and faithfulness in my career and working hard for the benefit of others. I'm a lazy person. At the core of it, I realize that and I know that. It says in Proverbs, as a father speaks to a son, and I've had these moments as a kid when my dad spoke to me, and I've had these moments as a dad as I speak to my kids where I'm challenging them to live a life of productivity and impact. The way the writer in the Proverbs says that, he says, those who work their land will have abundant food. You know what? Work is good, and it has a positive impact. But those who chase fantasies have no sense. Another way of translating the words have no sense is those who chase fantasies are fools. You know, if we want to get something for nothing, the lottery corporation offers us a lot of something for nothing. But many of us, in fact, most of us, have to lose so that one person can fulfill that promise and experience that dream. There's another sin in our lives, and it's one that we need to pay careful attention to as followers of Jesus, and that's the sin of neglect. Who is it that we are neglecting when we use our money in this sort of way? Those who deal with gambling at a level of addiction have told me stories as we sit back in the cafe about how they have dipped into the till at work to pay for their gambling habit. And then after a while, it got worse, and they got caught, and they lost a job, and charges were pressed. In the process, they've also double mortgaged their home, and they didn't let their spouse know that, and it's destroyed a marriage, and now they don't have as much access to their kids as they used to. In fact, their spouse is now living in another province, and they're dealing with the fact that instead of just every other weekend, it's every couple of months they get to see their kids, but they actually can't afford the bus ride to Saskatchewan anymore to see their kids because they've just destroyed their lives. Because of neglect in their life, they have undone all of the things that bring true contentment. And this is how it looks in Scripture. Paul, saying back to Timothy, the one who he's mentoring, tells a story. There's a widow who lives for pleasure, but she's dead even while she lives. Here's somebody who has suffered grief, and she's now living for pleasure, but even the pursuit of pleasure doesn't bring life. And many of us try to pursue things that will bring an instant fix to the griefs in our lives. A lottery promises an instant fix to the grief in our lives. But even the pursuit of that is deadening in the soul. Anyone who does not provide for their relatives, Paul says, especially for their own household, has denied the faith and is worse than an unbeliever. Paul clearly has a rank order of how things go here. Someone who follows Jesus has grown and matured in some remarkable ways. And clearly, if you are not providing for others, you're not much of a Jesus follower. And I think of how we use our money and the impact that we want to have in our city. And what is it that we've neglected? I think that as I listen to the news, I hear of how often we have neglected those who are elderly and who are shut in. And we are depending on the government to do it for us. Who is it whose grandma is sitting there unvisited? You know, the remarkable thing about these words are that we have a responsibility to our families. And gambling interferes with that responsibility. The last one that I'd like to touch on is stewardship. It says in Psalms, in a book of prayers and poetry, the psalmist says, "The earth is the Lord and everything in it, and the world and all who live in it." There's this sense of stewardship. We have a responsibility to take care of creation, to take care of all that God has given us. And the word steward really comes from the name of a servant who's responsible for all of his master's wealth and the management of his household. And Jesus tells the story this way. He says, there was a rich man who was going away to another country, and he gives his stewards, his servants, an amount of money. It says 5 bags of gold. The word there is mina. It literally means about 20 years of wages. So 5 bags of gold would be about 100 years of wages. If a guy makes $50,000, 20 years of wages is $1 million. This is $5 million. Gives another one $2 million, another one $1 million. They each have a lot of resources. The one who was given $5 million by the master doubles his money. He invests it, he puts it to work, and doubles his money. The one who has $2 million also doubles his money. He invests it and puts it to work, and the one who has $1 million is afraid of his master. He says the master was a hard man who had exacting standards, and fearfully he put his money in the ground so that he would not lose it. The master comes back and there's an accounting, and the master sees the results. 5 bags of gold is turned into 10. 2 bags of gold is turned into 4, and he celebrates their accomplishment with the words, "Well done, my good and faithful servants." And then the one who has the $1 million, the 1 bag of gold, says, "What did you do with it?" He says, "I buried it in the ground. Because you're a hard man. Didn't want to lose your money and incur your wrath." And it says that the master says, "You wicked servant. You didn't do anything with what I gave you." Now, if we take the story and we say there's a continuum in our lives, they're the things that God has given us, we've put them to work for positive benefit. Or if you go all the way to the one guy who didn't put anything to work, he just buried the gift in the ground. Gambling. What we do with God has given us is somewhere on the other side of burying it in the ground. It's a wastefulness with it. And Jesus invites us to consider what it is to use our money for the benefit of others. And so I want to ask you the question. If all of us together were to decide that we would no longer participate in the running of lotteries, casinos, and gambling. And we were to instead have a little jar in the back saying, I wanted to gamble this week, but instead I put my $10 in here, or my $5 in there, or my toonie in there. And we were to collect that for a year. Everyone in this community who had need because they lost a job, because they were now all of a sudden experiencing a disability, because all of a sudden the hot water tank went and they're living just on the edge financially and they don't know how they're going to fix it. We would have a tip jar that would more than take care of the needs of the needy in this community. You see, if we say that gambling is for charity, we can actually do something completely different as followers of Jesus. We could say, no, we will set that money aside for the benefit of those who truly have need in this community and in our city. That would be a different story to tell, and one that we would have a lot of fun telling. So, did I win anything under this? It's hard to roll these things up. Please? Play again.